Well, welcome here to session 5 of the class, The Road of Wisdom. We're going to be looking here in this session at the goal of Proverbs. I want to take an example here in the beginning of driving a car. Almost anyone can learn the basics of the rules of driving by reading the driver's safety manual. But the first time a new driver enters a fast-moving road with traffic, maybe it's raining outside, there's poor visibility, they're surrounded by impatient drivers that are honking at them, they quickly discover that knowing the rules of the road is not the same thing as having sound judgment and driving experience on it. One must learn how to read the road conditions, anticipate potential danger, respond calmly in demanding circumstances, and make good decisions in a moment. That is the difference between knowing how to drive and being a good driver. And that is the difference Proverbs is trying to make in a person's life with wisdom. Proverbs aims to do for the mind and the heart of the reader what driving experience, practice, and alertness does for the person behind the wheel in a vehicle. It forms the kind of person who can move wisely through a complicated world. The opening verses of Proverbs make that purpose unmistakable. Proverbs is not content to merely furnish the reader with correct knowledge and ideas, but it goes further and seeks to cultivate the kind of moral and spiritual maturity and sharpness by which a person can live well before God in the midst of life's complex and unpredictable events. The book of Proverbs doesn't open gently with a list of sentimental encouragements, flattering reassurances, or generic inspiring words. It opens like a serious teacher coming into the classroom and assuming that the students have come for a real education. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 2 through 6 sets that tone immediately for what the book of Proverbs is setting out to achieve. In Hebrew, these verses unfold as one long sentence. It's a sustained declaration of the goal of Proverbs. The effect of this construction is deliberate. Before the reader encounters the wise sayings of Proverbs themselves, the book announces what it is seeking to do in the reader. It's not merely trying to inform, it is trying to shape and mold them into something. The opening verses of Proverbs really matter because the vocabulary that is used in verses 2 through 6 is not a ornamental or like stylistic mechanism. Each term names a distinct part of the educational process in Proverbs. While many of the terms have overlap in meaning, they're not like just synonyms of each other that are piled up for emphasis. They form a carefully layered program of moral and practical instruction. The reader is meant to move through them from dullness to discernment, from immaturity to skillfulness, from naivety to refined judgment, and finally from simple-mindedness to the kind of maturity that can navigate all the various levels of complexity the world can throw at you without losing one's moral clarity and direction along the way. This is the educational vision of Proverbs. It assumes that human beings are not born innately wise. They're born as unrefined creatures, groping in the dark like children that need someone to hold their hand and guide them. We are all vulnerable to our impulses, to peer pressure, to vanity, fear, and foolish inclinations. Some people are simple-minded because they have not yet learned how to be properly cautious or attentive. Some people are immature in judgment, even though they're not young in age. Some people have already acquired some wisdom, but they still need to increase in learning. Proverbs is the textbook for all of them. It is a school for the naive, a training ground for the gullible, a curriculum for the humble, and a lifelong companion and encourager for the mature. Even more importantly, Proverbs insists that wisdom is public in its effects. It cannot remain private, inward, or just theoretical. If this education that Proverbs offers is genuine, it will manifest in a person's life in evident ways, such as in displaying righteousness, justice, and integrity. This can be seen in the way a person chooses to speak, to handle authority and power, how to treat others, and to walk through each day in a treacherous world. It will show up in their actual conduct. Thus, wisdom in Proverbs is not simply about gaining a better way to live, it is about becoming a better kind of person. The major educational terms in Proverbs chapter 1, verses 2 through 6, reveal the objectives for that transformation to happen. They describe the intentional architecture of the book. While wisdom is the ultimate aim, understanding is what supplies discernment. Discernment corrects and reshapes the learner. Prudence protects the inexperienced. Knowledge grounds one's judgment in reality. Discretion enables wise planning. Learners keep the wise receptive and learning keeps the wise receptive and on a path of growth. Wise guidance teaches a person how to steer through complex situations and environments. And finally, the ability to understand a proverb, an obscure saying or a riddle, marks the interpretive maturity that Proverbs seeks to produce in the reader. Together, these terms unveil the true goal of the book, the formation of a person capable of living skillfully, uprightly, and reverently under God's authority and rule. We're going to go through those different components of the curriculum of Proverbs in a little more detail. The first one is wisdom. Wisdom is the Hebrew word chokmah. And this is the most comprehensive term in the book. In Proverbs, though, wisdom is not abstract brilliance, nor simply is it the possession of, like, high intellect. It simply refers to the skill of living well in alignment with God. It refers to competence, expertise, and practical know-how in the arenas of life itself. Within it is the moral compass to navigate life in an ordered world according to the way that God has designed it to be lived. That is why Proverbs treats wisdom as something far more practical than what modern readers might expect. A person may be educated, articulate, and intellectually trained, yet still be unwise in relationships, in money, in speech, in work, or socially. Proverbs is after something deeper and more integrated than just a person's intelligence. It wants to make a person adept at life overall. It aims to produce a person who understands consequences to actions, recognizes the moral significance of choices and associations, and knows how to act properly in a world where actions have long-range effects and really do lead somewhere. Take, for example, a skilled sailor who does not merely know the names of all the ropes or the sails, the winds and the currents, but knows how to handle his vessel appropriately in the changing weather and conditions of the sea. Or consider a master craftsman who does not merely describe the beauty and structure of something they imagine, but knows how to produce it and make it durable and fitting for use. In the same way, the wise person does not merely admire moral truth and knowledge of the world because he has learned how to work with it and achieve the optimal outcome. That is why Proverbs begins here with wisdom. The book wants to move a person from being constantly surprised by the consequences of life to becoming someone who can anticipate how things unfold and adapt accordingly. It's the difference between wandering through life and being able to dwell in it skillfully. Yet that skill does not arise by just instinct or age and experience alone. To live wisely, one must first learn how to make good choices. Wisdom depends on perception. And that leads to the next term in Proverbs chapter 1, understanding. Understanding is the Hebrew term bina. And if wisdom covers the broad skill of living well, understanding is the ability that lets a person perceive that what that life really requires. The Hebrew root of bina points to seeing what is between. And that mental image is very telling about the meaning of understanding. Understanding is the capacity to distinguish, compare, analyze, and interpret. It's the capacity to see beneath the obvious and recognize what lies under the surface. This means understanding is not content with just rendering appearances. Anyone can react to what is just plainly right in front of them. But few can detect motives, patterns, implication, and other hidden factors. Understanding is about reading between the lines. It asks not only what is happening, but why it is happening, what it means, what it may lead to. Take, for example, a judge who hears a testimony, examines evidence, and weighs people's competing claims about what happened. His task is not simply to collect the facts. He must distinguish truth from falsehood, sincerity from deception. He must interpret what lies behind and between the words that are placed before him and carefully compare and scrutinize their meaning, the character of those who are giving the testimony, and the circumstances that surround each part of evidence that he has received. This is what understanding does in everyday life. It enables the person to hear a flattering statement and determine whether there's a hidden motive concealed behind it, or for someone to observe a troubling recurrence in life and perceive whether it's just coincidental or not. And it allows for a person to detect deeper relational issues that might lie beneath the surface of a disagreement. This kind of understanding is indispensable because life is not always straightforward. Temptation often is dressed as pleasure, and foolishness can appear bold and attractive. Harmful people may sound confident and persuasive, but without understanding, a person becomes vulnerable, not because they lack information, but because they lack interpretive depth to see what is really going on. However, with understanding, a person can begin to develop the ability to peer deeper into a situation or a circumstance and to perceive the reality. Yet, even accurate perception by itself is not enough. A person may correctly see what is wrong and still resist the correction that truth demands from them. Understanding alone does not change one's character. No one can become wise without wise teaching and discipline. Wise teaching and discipline come from the Hebrew word musar. Musar brings an important tension into the educational program of Proverbs. It can mean things like teaching, discipline, correction, and even chastisement. It reminds the reader that wisdom is not passively absorbed. It is a process of formation, and that formation often comes with friction, tension, and struggle. Proverbs assumes that the student will be wrong, naive, self-protective, and in need of moral adjustment. Wisdom is therefore not acquired cheaply. It takes personal change to achieve. And this is one of Proverbs' most important insights. Many people enjoy learning that confirms their view or affirms them as being right. However, few welcome teaching that expose them, challenge them, or make them see themselves for who they really are. But wise teaching and discipline are precisely that kind of instruction. It's the sort of instruction that corrects wrong conduct, rebukes distorted thoughts, confronts the learner with the need to change. But a person who is allergic to correction has, in effect, already opted out of wisdom before they've even begun. When a young, immature person receives a stern rebuke because he has been careless, lazy, disrespectful, or just irresponsible, the parent, the teacher, the mentor, whoever is speaking to them, speaks directly about his poor conduct. The moment is clearly going to be uncomfortable. Obviously, his pride will be wounded, and he'll probably feel shame. Yet, if he accepts the correction rather than resenting it, the rebuke becomes the beginning of moral strengthening and character building. He no longer views the correction then as mere criticism. He is being trained in discipline. The pain of the moment is serving the good of his future. And that is the heart of wise teaching and discipline. It's not just punishment or criticism for punishment and criticism's sake. It is formative correction. It assumes that human beings do not just drift toward maturity. Foolishness needs to be driven out of us. The person who benefits from discipline is the one who values becoming wise more than seeming to be wise. At this point in the curriculum, the reader has moved from admiring wisdom to seeking understanding and then submitting to correction and discipline. But discipline and correction by itself is not enough. A person may accept rebuke and still remain open to lies, deception, and fraud. He may be willing to be taught and yet still be easily led astray. Proverbs therefore adds the next necessary component, prudence. Prudence is from the Hebrew word orma, and it's often translated as shrewdness, subtlety, or practical astuteness. In Proverbs, it is the quality that protects the simple from being governed by whatever influence happens to be the loudest or most appealing or most persuasive in the moment. The naive are not necessarily stupid, but naive people are open, and they are too open. They've not yet learned that not every voice deserves a place in their mind or consideration, and every opportunity is not always a good opportunity. Prudence gives them that protective boundary. This term is especially important because it adds a defensive dimension to wisdom. The prudent person does not merely desire the good, he learns how to recognize danger before it even comes near him. He sees that some things are attractive on the surface while destructive underneath. He becomes able to test what is presented to him instead of blindly taking it or going along with it. This is how the educational movement of Proverbs develops. Discipline teaches a person to be corrected when he is wrong. Prudence teaches him to become less easily captured by wrong influences in the first place. It turns teachability into awareness or alertness. It guards the mind and heart against manipulation, seduction, and moral carelessness. Still, prudence does not operate in a vacuum. A person cannot foresee danger well unless he has a real grasp of how life works. He must be grounded in observable reality, not merely suspicious of appearances. And that grounding is supplied by the next component, knowledge. Knowledge, from the Hebrew word da'at, in Proverbs, it refers to experiential, verifiable awareness and cognition of reality. It is broader than simply possessing mental data, but it's more concrete than something like intuition. It includes information that's gathered through the senses and is tested in the course of life and is put into practical use. And so it's not just simply knowing about things. It is actually knowing things as they really are through careful attention, contact, and lived experience. And this is why Proverbs values knowledge as the foundation for right conduct. Good judgment cannot float free from reality. A person who does not know the actual state of things is forced then to live by guesswork or assumptions, wishful thinking, or maybe the borrowed opinion of others. In contrast, the wise person pays attention, looks carefully at the world, remembers what he has observed, and lets that knowledge then govern and inform the choice he should make. Knowledge is what gives prudence a foundation. It keeps caution from becoming merely just anxiety about something. It allows a person to distinguish not only that something feels wrong, but the reason for why it is wrong. It teaches him to interpret observable realities according to their moral significance. And this is one reason why Proverbs is so practical. It insists that wisdom must be anchored in how the world actually works. And yet, knowledge, though necessary and foundational, still does not tell a person how to choose. One may know the facts and still fail to act deliberately in the right way. One may understand reality and still get swept up by pressure, emotions, or manipulation. So, Proverbs adds another layer to the curriculum, and that is discretion. Discretion, from the Hebrew word mezumah, it is the ability to consider potential options, courses of actions, or situations, and make a choice that will have the most beneficial outcome for a particular goal. It is strategic intelligence, you might say, that's at work in life. It allows a person to kind of think ahead, to consider the counsel and advice of others, to learn from past experience, and then to act intentionally rather than reactively. In Proverbs, discretion pushes the reader to see the paths before them and then to choose the one that leads to the destination they seek. Thus, the reader is no longer merely avoiding traps or foolish temptations. He is learning how to order his steps in life to direct his course. This term is important because it marks the difference between being cautious and being purposeful. Prudence helps a person recognize danger and be cautious. Discretion, though, helps him choose and maintain the wise path in life. So it's not just merely defensive, it's constructive. It allows a person to resist being hurried, cornered, or emotionally steered by others because he's already thought through what he ought to do. This quality is essential in a world that's filled with pressure. Trends, manipulative people, emotional appeals, and social expectations, these all try to draw a person into reactive thinking. Discretion helps to resist the pull of the world. A person with discretion learns to think with the future in view and all the possibilities that lie before them. The person becomes able to then choose which one of those is the best option rather than merely responding haphazardly or conveniently. Yet Proverbs does not allow such steadiness to harden into self-sufficiency. The person who's become prudent, knowledgeable, and has discretion must still remain receptive. He must continue to listen. And indeed, one of the clearest marks of a person with wisdom is the refusal to believe that one has already arrived. And that leads to the next step, learning. Learning, from the Hebrew word lakah, at this point, Proverbs makes a striking move here. It pauses to say that the wise person will listen to and increase in learning. This kind of interrupts any assumption that wisdom is only for like beginners or simpletons. In fact, the verse establishes a crucial dividing line that the wise are the ones who keep listening, while the foolish are the ones who've imagined that they've already finished their learning. The term here for learning carries this sense of kind of receiving, taking in, appropriating, and making truth one's own. This is more than just like passive listening. It's the inward act of allowing instruction to settle into one's thinking and then eventually shape one's words or one's actions. It requires attentiveness, humility, and a willingness to let another voice speak into a situation and even correct your own or one's own. And that is why listening in Proverbs is not passive. It's not a passive activity. It takes resolve. It takes intentionality, and certainly takes humility. One must resist the urge to resort to their own self-confidence by filtering everything through what they already think, or to treat correction as a threat rather than as an opportunity for personal refinement. Growth stops when a person is no longer willing to listen. But the wise continue to listen because they remain teachable, willing to learn. This section of the educational sequence is absolutely crucial. Wisdom without receptivity becomes brittle and easily lost. Discretion without listening becomes arrogance and pride. Remaining a learner counteracts these tendencies. It keeps a person open to further self-development and progress. And from there, Proverbs advances to the next part of the curriculum. The one who keeps learning is no longer merely accumulating insight, they're becoming capable of steering life with sound judgment. And that brings us to wise guidance. Wise guidance from the Hebrew tabalot, it is vivid and memorable because this term comes from nautical language. It evokes the idea of roping and rigging, captains and pilots, and the entire enterprise and skill it takes to steer a vessel safely through uncertain waters. The verbal imagery is powerful because it captures something essential about wisdom. Life is not lived in a fixed condition with predictable scenarios. The winds will shift, the storms will come, the unforeseen circumstances will arise. Wise guidance is the capacity to navigate through all of that without losing one's course in life. This term, therefore, expands wisdom into the realm of strategy and direction. It is not enough simply to possess good impulses or sound principles. One must know how to apply them rightly amid all sorts of complex situations. Wise guidance means a person has learned how to navigate through these treacherous times and how to move toward a destination without losing their way, capsizing under pressure, or succumbing to temptation and distraction. This also creates a meaningful echo with the opening idea of wisdom as a craftsman or a sailor. At the beginning, the sailor illustrated the competence in broad terms. Here, this nautical imagery of tabulot becomes even more precise. The learner has grown from simply admiring and seeing skill to actually acquiring the ability to use it in order to steer through unstable conditions. And therefore, wisdom has matured into guidance. And yet, Proverbs still has one more objective to mention. The student must not only live and steer through life well, he must also become capable of interpreting sayings, obscure expressions, and riddles. In other words, the education of Proverbs reaches its fullest point when the mind of the reader has become capable of handling complexity in the sense of how wisdom is actually expressed. Verse 6 presents the cumulative effect that Proverbs desires for all the aforementioned traits and characteristics. Proverbs wants the reader to understand a proverb and an obscure expression, words of the wise and their riddles. This introduces the final dimension of the educational program in Proverbs, that is to become adept at interpretive maturity. Life is not always simple, and truth is not always delivered in simple terms and in the most direct way possible. Sometimes it's layered, compressed, indirect, and sometimes even difficult to understand. Proverbs does not apologize for this. It uses these forms intentionally to train the reader. In a previous session, we reviewed some of the various forms in Proverbs that are used to train the reader to become wise. For example, here we read about obscure expressions and riddles. Well, they're not put in Proverbs to frustrate the reader. They're there to stretch and deepen the reader's understanding. They force the reader to slow down, to carefully think and search beneath the initial impression upon reading, and then to wrestle with the true meaning that's there. In this way, the obscure expressions and the riddles, they train a person to have patience, to be attentive, and to think carefully before making a decision or coming to a conclusion. And this is especially important in a world that rewards quick thinking, fast reactions and decision making, and all these surface level impressions. Proverbs teaches the opposite habit. It assumes that wisdom grows where a person stays with a difficult truth long enough for it to open up to them and therefore have a deeper place to reside within them. Just as a parable, like what Jesus uses often in his teachings, require more than just a casual first-time hearing. Proverbs, obscure expressions, sayings of the wise, and riddles, these all require the learner to engage, to reflect, and then to pursue the insight it has to offer. And this is the final point that gathers up all the others. The person who can understand an obscure saying is not just simply a clever person. He's become the kind of person that Proverbs intended to form all along. He's learned to seek wisdom, distinguish it carefully, accept correction, avoid deception, to know reality, to plan deliberately, to keep listening, to steer skillfully, and now to interpret the complexity of wisdom without losing its clarity. That is one of the clearest indicators of maturity in the book. Wisdom is not merely the ability to answer questions. It's the ability to remain morally steady and mentally alert when the meaning is not immediately obvious. And so this is the goal of Proverbs, to bring all of these things to the reader. Wisdom, understanding, wise teaching and discipline, prudence, knowledge, discretion, learning, and wise guidance, so that the reader will be able to know proverbs, obscure expressions, sayings of the wise, and riddles that contain all the wisdom Proverbs has to offer. When all of these terms are read together, the goal of Proverbs becomes unmistakably clear. The book is trying to form a person to be a whole individual the way God designed them to be. Wisdom is the overarching aim. As we started with, it is the skill of living well in a world that is structured by God and in a way that is in alignment with how He designed life to be lived. Understanding enables the learner to distinguish and interpret. Discipline and wise teaching train him through correction. Prudence protects him from being too easily influenced by the wrong things. Knowledge grounds him in reality. Discretion teaches him to think ahead and to act with independence in their purpose. And learning keeps him receptive and growing. Wise guidance enables him to navigate complexity, and the interpretive maturity equips him to understand the deeper, less obvious meaning, but more important one in which wisdom is trying to impart. The social and ethical dimensions of this formation, though, must not be overlooked. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 3, it emphasizes that this will result in observable outcomes such as displaying righteousness, justice, and integrity. And that means wisdom is not just a private possession. It's proven in the world of relationships, responsibility, acts of fairness and kindness, and consistency. And if wisdom is real, then it will change the person and how they use power, how they treat others, how they handle truth, and whether their inward and outward life actually align with each other. Proverbs refuses to let spirituality just remain a vague idea. It presses a person toward righteousness that can be seen and demonstrated through action. And this is what makes Proverbs such an important book, because it's not satisfied with just an admiration for what is good. It wants people to embody it. It wants to create people who are not easily seduced or manipulated, or not easily destabilized, and are not easily satisfied with shallow perceptions and shallow superficial relationships. It aims to take the simple and make them prudent, to take the young and make them knowledgeable and have discretion, to take the people who already have wisdom and to make them even more wise, and to lead them toward a life that can all be steered with skill and integrity. So the promise here of what Proverbs is seeking to do in verses 2 through 6 of chapter 1 is not a promise of quick answers, but it's the promise of transformation. The book offers a method on reshaping how one sees, thinks, receives, chooses, and lives. It is a long education process. It's not something that happens quickly, but it is the training by which a person comes to inhabit God's world with the reverence, competence, and skill that he wants. And that is the true goal of Proverbs, not simply to inform people, but to make them wise, not merely to sharpen their intellect, but to form their character, and not merely to explain life, but to teach them the art of how to live it well. In the next session, we are going to be looking at how to find this wisdom. Stay tuned. We'll see you then.